Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for tuning in to Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Each week, our host will introduce you to a various cast of characters you'll only find here. Each host will share experience, knowledge, and expertise regarding their years in the fire service, allowing you to call in and speak with them live, an experience you can only find on Fire Engineering Talk Radio. So thanks for joining us. Enjoy and stay safe. Welcome to Extrication Radio.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Dave Dalrymple, and your host for Extrication Radio. Hope everyone is safe tonight and doing well. Had a good Labor Day vacation time. I know I was off this weekend. It was a grand kind of thing. Broadcasting to you again tonight from work, upstairs in the comm hub of the Death Star Mark IV, as you know, or excuse me, the Death Star Mark III. As you know, the previous two were destroyed by the evil rebels. But seriously, broadcasting from work here at RWJ UHEMS. What we're going to talk about tonight, we're going to talk about vehicle technology and those issues and concerns that face us all. And that can be from any sort of vehicle-related emergency, from the simple medical emergency on the side of the road, to motor vehicle crash, to vehicle fire. Vehicle technology has a lot of different spins for all of us to deal with, to manage, and really to ponder about and how to manage effectively today. We see more and more things come down the road to us, especially those of us that have been doing this for quite a while. In some ways, I think the newer people in the fire service have a more of an open book or an open mind to a lot of things that are going on, and maybe because they don't have to, well, let's say, I would never want to say unlearn anything, because I truly feel that everything has its place and time, and the more information, the more tools you can stuff in your mental toolbox, the better off you are. But one of the things that I have to say, I've seen techniques run all sorts of different directions, and tools that have gone all sorts of different directions. Some good, some bad, some not so well. Interesting. How about that? How about that? We'll say interesting. So, one of the things with this, and I kind of premised this whole vehicle technology thing, because a lot of the things that are out there kind of frighten people, or maybe frighten is not the correct word. Maybe people become apprehensive. That apprehension, a little bit of common sense, a little bit of knowledge goes a long way to dispel a lot of the things today. And one of the things to start off the bat with, one of the big things that people talk about today and have been talking about, and I'm actually really surprised considering that hybrids and electric vehicles, and mostly hybrids for the most part, have been around us now since 1999. That's how long they've been around us. And people are still concerned and worried about different issues with these vehicles and such like that. And now with the advent of plug-in hybrids and other alternative fueled vehicles, one of the things to remember really comes back to what I like to teach and what a lot of the people that I'm affiliated with, they kind of have a lot of the same mindset, is the fact that we need to kind of almost return to basics. And while as I've attended many programs, taught many programs, seen many different programs, everybody wants to do the advanced stuff, the cool stuff, the stuff that you once in a lifetime job type of thing. That's all well and good. Don't get me wrong. Any type of situational scenario where you can get in and run any scenario as a problem is a fantastic learning tool. One of the things that we need to really think about is basic, the basic principles and the basic principles in theory and basic practices of vehicles all the way around to deal with technology effectively. One of the things with being effective with this today are, you know, let's kind of start from the very beginning, basics. What do you think about basic issues? The biggest basic issue today is we need to isolate power on vehicles today. We need to take the power away. Power is not our friend. However, as you and I both know, power drives a lot of the different vehicle concerns of today. A lot of the different vehicle adjuncts, such as seats, sliding doors, hatches, and all that kind of stuff. Power can be helpful, but ultimately power is really not our friend. So, at the very least, kind of a two-step process, or actually a three-step process, if you want to be technical about it. So, why don't we go back to a three-step process? We want to make sure the vehicle is shut off. Now, with the advent of smart keys or keyless wireless ignition proximity keys, we have to make sure that the vehicle is shut off. So, we need to engage the push button or the rocker switch. It can be either or today. Make sure the vehicle is actually physically shut off. And that even goes for a simple EMS call. Let's say you have a sick person or somebody that's, say, supposedly had a seizure or a diabetic issue or some sort of medical problem. We actually need to ensure that the vehicle is shut off so it won't move. We also need to do, once we've ensured the vehicle is shut off, we need to locate the key and remove the key from the vehicle and put it back in our apparatus. Now, that really comes back to, and it's a good habit to build upon, even if it's a traditional metal key. I know my daily driver of a, let's say, 2001 Focus has a metal key, yet my new car that will soon arrive is switched over to a proximity conditioner keyed vehicle. The reason why we want to keep that vehicle back in our apparatus is this, just simple lockout, tagout. And that comes back to, we want to take that key out of the range of the vehicle so it can't interact with the vehicle. The third part of power isolation is this. We need to locate in the vehicle and access the 12-volt primary battery of the vehicle, whether it's a conventionally drivetrain vehicle, whether it's an alternative fueled vehicle, it makes no difference. If we do this as an everyday common practice, and we get in the habit of it, one of the things when a push comes to shove and we need to do this in a hurry, it becomes second nature. However, one of the things to come back to this is this. Batteries, at least almost half of vehicles today, batteries live outside the engine compartment. And one of the easiest ways to check when you open the hood of the vehicle and you see a jump point in the vehicle, that 12-volt battery is somewhere else in the vehicle. If it's not up front in the engine compartment, the next best place to look is in the rear of the vehicle, in the rear cargo area, in the trunk, or, like I said, cargo area. It could be a hatchback, could be a minivan, can be an SUV, where we don't have a traditional type of trunk. Anytime that we have those type of batteries, one of the things to remember and keep this in mind is not only do you have to move part of the vehicle trim, could be carpet, could be plastic trim, or and or both, but you have to move all of the occupant's stuff out as well to find the battery. Now, one of the things that we need to think about today, and with the advent of vehicles having more than one 12-volt battery, and a good idea to think about this, we're used to listening to about hybrid vehicles where they're silent upon stopping and starting. Hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and electrics. Well, conventional drivetrain vehicles also have a feature called stop and go to help minimize emissions and carbon footprint. So even those vehicles have a secondary small battery, so when your vehicle comes to a stop, you have power still to power things such as your radio, your navigation systems, and such like that. It doesn't necessarily have to look like a normal standard 12-volt automotive battery. It can be a lot of different sizes. It can be a lot of different locations. It doesn't have to be in any close proximity to the primary 12-volt battery. Now, one of the things along with this is, along with basics, is finding information. One of the best things that we need to do today with, in the realm of vehicle technology is having some sort of background material that we can access on scene. Now, that access can be come from a lot of different places. Can be from books. Hamatro made the Rescuer's Guide to Safety Systems. Moditech makes the crash recovery systems. And one of the other things now is now you have smartphone apps from a bunch of different companies. Most of these revolve around alternative fuel vehicles, honestly. However, crash recovery system is available on Android and Apple platforms. So you have the ability to access both of these and have the ability to have not only alternative fueled vehicles, but conventional fueled vehicles all in one platform so you can access this information. Now, the information that these will give you, besides one, say, is the vehicle proximity keyed, where the battery is, or if it's got more than one, where they all are, where airbags are, which we'll eventually talk about tonight. And more importantly, especially when we're dealing with side curtain airbags, where the inflation modules are for those systems. Okay? Along with this, another thing that we're going to talk about, and we talked about extensively in the session before last when we talked about cutting techniques, was any high strength or ultra high strength material reinforcements, and those are shown. One of the nice things with CRS is the simple fact that when you click on some of these objects, not only do they come up and they tell you, for example, if it's an ultra high strength material, it tells you what kind of force is needed to sever it. But also, if it's an alternative fueled vehicle, it'll come up with a splash screen immediately and tell you that this vehicle is, in fact, an alternative fueled vehicle. And here are the primary, secondary, and tertiary ways to shut the vehicle down. So with power isolation, what power isolation does for us to keep us safe is does two things. One, by taking the key, by shutting the vehicle off and taking the key out of the ignition, it depowers and de-energizes the safety systems in the vehicle. Okay, drains down the energy storage capacitors in the airbag computer, and eventually drains down the storage capacitors in the high voltage system if it's an alternative fuel vehicle. Disconnecting the 12 volt system ensures that everything dies and drains down. Now, the good thing today, most vehicles, when we at least shut the vehicle off and take the key away, airbags are pretty much drained down and done with in the range of 30 seconds to 2 minutes for by and large for the most part. So that's one of the things to think about, where we used to have wide ranges of drain times. One of the things also with this that we should document it too. So there are kind of basics right off the bat for power isolation to make us safe. So when we're dealing with technology, right off the bat, regardless if it's an alternative fueled vehicle or conventional fueled vehicle, get rid of the power. Now, simple stabilization of vehicle. Most times we're going to run into vehicles. One of the things today, most vehicles are run closer to the ground. How many times have you seen step shocks today where we used to be able to slide a step shock? Pretty much most of the steps of the stair itself would get underneath the vehicle, and then we could tighten it up with a wedge underneath it. Many times today, because the vehicle will absorb energy, especially if it's a frontal impact or a rear impact, the vehicle will crush and crumple. And depending on the severity of the crash, well, if it's a front impact, a lot of times not only will it crush, but the drivetrain will also drop on the ground as well as part of that whole energy absorption principle. Now, part of that goes back into, well, how do we stabilize? And again, let's talk about vehicles on their wheels. Step shocks are sometimes difficult to use. They only get a step or two underneath, and they stick out pretty far. They kind of become kind of a trip hazard. And also, a lot of times, we've seen them where we take vehicle doors off. We displace the doors or the side of the vehicle. We'll actually pull the step shock out of the way, too, because it is sticking so far out. We kind of need to sometimes rethink our simple vehicle stabilization. Maybe a platform and a wedge, a quick chock style configuration, like I've talked about in the past. And like you can go out to fireengineering.com and take a look at one of the films that we've shot. One of the things to look at with that is that gives you the added flexibility of not only having the ability to stabilize the vehicle, but also regardless of the ride height of the vehicle, you can add to it or detract from it. You can use a simple, a lot of times our frontal stabilization is nothing more than you need a wedge for it. So vehicles in any other configuration, there's lots of different strut systems that are out there and such like that, that make short work of vehicle stabilization. So stabilization done. Now we start to get into thinking about glass management and making a pathway to get the patient out. Because bottom line, vehicle rescue is a patient care driven skill. Always comes back to what drives the incident is what is presented or potentially presented from our patients that are in the vehicle. So glass management-wise, one of the things to think about that we're seeing more and more of as time goes along, we're used to seeing laminated glass all the way around in higher-end vehicles as a common occurrence, where all the windows in the vehicle have to be cut out, not just center punched out, to be removed. As time goes along, and especially as the newer side impact standards come into play, we're going to see more and more, if not all, vehicles go to having laminated glass all the way around, where we're going to have to get used to actually literally physically cutting windows out. Six windows in the average car today, at least in an SUV and a minivan, even more. It all depends on what's going on. And also, one of the things that has come about is there are materials out there that help with glass management more so than ever before, such as PAC-X Smash, which is a clear film that goes over top of the glass, or the protector wrap or extrication wrap materials that adhere to the glass that will hold it in place when you break it, much like window tint with vehicles down and in the south and in the southwest of the country. It's kind of that, like that material. So technology-wise, once we've gotten those basic things down, we still come back to, like I had said before, vehicle rescue is a patient care-driven skill. We need to create a pathway to get that person out. Now, one of the things that we were used to doing and were the common thing to do is the typical door displacement or door pop. One of the things with door displacements today, that doesn't exactly give us the right amount of space, especially with the fact as vehicles get smaller and smaller as time marches along today. One of the things to think about with that is simply this. The door displacement alone doesn't give you the right amount of space. So now we have to think about, well, what works better? What works better for us in hand today? One of the things to think about is most vehicles have four doors today. In a lot of ways, that can be a big help for us. Taking both doors and the B post as one unit, basically removing the entire side, gives us about the same amount of space as taking the roof off the car. And especially if we do this on the same side as where the patient is, there's no obstructions to block our way coming out. And one of the things also is that you will find that a side removal generally is actually an easier task to accomplish than a simple door displacement, because of the way of vehicle technology being more difficult to manage just simple door displacements. So because of that, and then think about the materials that are in doors, in vehicle structure, and such like that. Finally, people have come around and seeing the fact that, wow, there's vehicles that have materials that actually have materials that are difficult for us to cut and to deal with. And it looks like I have somebody, so let me drop offline here and see who it is. Hold on a second. Hello? 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 Hello?
Hey, Dave, it's Smitty.
Hey, Smitty.
What's going on?
How are you, Smitty?
Good, and you?
Good, good. I'm glad you stopped by tonight.
Cool, I figure I'd give a call in.
Oh, sounds great. Sounds great, bro. I'm just kind of talking about what I've been talking about so far is just kind of basic stuff. Tonight's topic was about vehicle technology, and I wanted to start off with the premise of just basics, whereas people always hear, and you've heard it too, that everybody wants to do the advanced stuff and all that kind of stuff, yet we watch people in classes and as much as they want to do the advanced stuff, some of the basic skills just aren't there. So what I've talked about so far is simple power isolation, just power isolation all the way around to get into the habit of doing it, regardless of what kind of vehicle it is, whether it's alternative fuel, whether it's conventionally drivetrain, whichever. So what I was talking about starting to get into was creating a pathway to take the patient out, and then talking about materials and stuff. And you kind of jumped in right at the right time. So since I was going to eventually talk about you and your website and all that kind of stuff and your background knowledge, I'll let you talk for a little bit. So if you want to kind of introduce yourself and tell everybody what you're about and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no problem.
I'll hand the mic over for a little bit.
Okay. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Hey.
Yeah, my name's Mike Smith. I go by Smitty, and I work in the auto industry outside of Detroit, and I run for a small suburban fire department outside Detroit called Wixom, the city of Wixom. Like most other fire departments, we run a lot of medicals and a lot of car accidents and that type of stuff. And a lot of that got me interested in the extrication side of it and to, to start getting a better idea on what these cars are made of, what these cars have in them, and whatnot. So that led me to down the path to start boronextrication.com, which I started over four years ago, as a resource for firefighters to start seeing what these vehicles have in it, and then to try to use some of my automotive background knowledge to kind of let firefighters see what the car designers are thinking when we put stuff places and why we do what and all that good stuff. So, in a nutshell, that's pretty much about me.
Okay, cool. Thanks, buddy. One of the things resource-wise, and Mike's his website is awesome. He just has just a fantastic amount of knowledge and information that's readily available. And one of the things, kind of like it's one of these open secrets, I think sometimes so people just don't know about what's out there that's accessible and all that kind of stuff. But Mike, one of the things that you do as part of the automotive industry, and I know proprietary things you can't talk about and all that kind of stuff. I know about that kind of end of things. but one of the things that, what are you seeing, material wise, what are you seeing along those ends?
Well, there's some stuff coming down the pipe now that I don't think there's quite a name for it yet. It might be mega high strength, mega ultra high strength steels, giga steels. You know, I don't think it's really been quite coined a name yet by the automakers. But there's stronger stuff out there than boron that they're looking at, you know, putting into the car structures. And the biggest thing is they really care about two things. They care about their insurance rating. You know, they want the best score in their crash test. And then they want to make a light vehicle that gets good fuel economy.
Yep.
So when you put those two things together, you know, that makes them want to build a strong car that's going to be harder for us to get our patient out, and a lighter car, which makes it harder for us to get our patient out.
Yep. That's right. You're right. And one of the things that had always intrigued me, and one of the things that I've always brought back home here because of doing so much stuff overseas, one of the things that's helped me for doing things back home is watching how people have because, as you know, a lot of the places overseas where I've gone, even where it's considered, you know, a normal kind of country status-wise, there's not a lot of hydraulic tools, and a lot of the hydraulic tools are older. They're just basically making, enlarging existing spaces, really, more than anything else. That's the biggest thing that came across when I worked with some of the Swedish extrication challenge teams and actually been over to Sweden with Huron Valentin and when he was over at FDIC to teach with us a couple years back. That was one of the things that really intrigued me was the fact that, well, here they're doing it, and they're doing it also not only with just hydraulics, they're using regular power, you know, hand power tools. So they have kind of a, it's almost like a rescue jack, but it's not quite the same type of, it's not really a stabilization strut. It's almost like a lifting device more than anything else. They're using tools to enlarge spaces, especially with time critical patients. And they're more into, as a whole, Smitty, taking patients out, head, belly, toes in line as much as physically possible. Their kind of mentality is they try and take the roof off of every vehicle. And if anything, they take a door off closest to the patient just as to make better access for their to watch their low extremities and for patient management. But basically they try and go out the back of the car every time if possible.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think, you know, largely a lot of people, and I'll be honest, I've defaulted to it too many times, we grab the longboard instead of the KED board.
Yep.
And I think, you know, the KED board is pretty much what we should be using on our extrications. But a lot of times it's just so much quicker, you know. And when I mean quicker, you're talking, you know, a few minutes quicker. You know, you can get in a get the occupant, the patient, and the KED board relatively quickly. But then the other thing is, now you've got your KED board that you got to get back from the hospital. It adds. There's a lot of people when you throw that out there, they always want to go for the longboard because you can swap those out so easily.
Yeah.
But in the long run, it's what's best for the patient.
Sure.
And that's
sure.
Really, really what we're there for is what is best for the patient. Because
yep.
Cutting up the car is fun and all, but really the whole reason we're there is the patient. I think sometimes a lot of people kind of forget that. They get excited, you know, they forget that we're there to help that patient.
Yeah, it's kind of becomes almost like an exercise of cutting the car apart versus, well, what's best in the patient's interest more so. One of the things, though, Smitty, is there's other things out there, like, and that's one of the other things that we've always tried to explore, especially since I'm also on the EMS side of things, was some of the other devices that are newer out there that can package patients a little bit easier and such like that. Because that is one thing that's difficult to put on people in cars of today, as you know, just sheer space-wise, you just out of room. Whether
mm-hmm.
whether it's the seat, the combination of the seat and the interior, or the seat, the interior, and the damage to the vehicle, because of all, the vehicle is crushed up and, you know, it's made to crush and absorb energy. So you got a smaller car that's now even smaller than before.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
so,
Now
you were talking about this mega material. I've seen some of the things in the some of the stuff from SAE between the newsletters and the magazine and stuff come around I noticed some of the material that they put into the rocker panels that actually, when any force is applied to it, the material actually gets stronger. The harder you push against it, the stronger it becomes.
and that's true. That's what I've found out so far on the because a lot of the stuff, you know, I get access to some stuff, but like you probably know just as well as you said earlier, the automotive is probably like the CIA when it comes to keeping their secrets.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? I remember when I met you for the first time up in Detroit for the DVD shoot, the amount of non-disclosure forms that we had to sign when we were at Ford, there was like a stack of like 7 different forms that we had to sign just to be walking around, just to walk around there and stuff like that. It was kind of insane. And that was,
and that was
unfortunately, really, that's like the best place to see this stuff, because especially for the way tool evolutions act and react with vehicles today. Because, you know as well as I do, most cars that we get for any kind of training or drilling, they're pretty much past their life expectancy and they're pretty shot. And where else can you get newer vehicles that have? We all talk about high strength material and stuff like that, but yet, where do we get to play with it?
Yeah, unless we're lucky and get hold of a good tow yard or auto recycler that'll take care of us. It's usually the like the 1980 special.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? The no, go ahead.
Then you get into the trap of where everybody thinks that it's just a junker, and then you have to make it into that late model car that we're going to encounter on the road.
Yep. Yep. You're right. One of the things
I've done that in trainings before, where someone starts to cut the B pillar and like, no, your tool just stalled out. And they'll say, no, we've got the latest and greatest cutter. We can cut through anything. I said, yep, your hose just broke. Well, we've got an extra hose. Your power unit's down. What are you going to do?
Yep.
You know, we can challenge our guys, with the most simplest vehicles out there and teach them what they need to know.
That's true. And that's one of the things that few people actually, and I'm glad you brought that up. Last month, we did Extrication Radio. I talked to Carl Avery, who's the chairman of Turk US, and we were talking about extrication challenges as learning venues, more so than actual competition kind of thing. And that was one of the things that simple things by just taking things away from people that you take them out of their comfort zone. More so than anything else.
And that's the honest to God truth right there. Because when we get in that stressful situation, we get out of our comfort zone. We're so used to saying using the cutters, using the spreaders. Then you take that away, or something goes wrong, and you have to think outside the box. If you haven't trained for that, you have nothing to revert back to. Because our training is what we're going to revert back to in that stressful situation, when we need to go to that plan B, that plan C.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you, Mike. I agree with you completely. And one of the things that we've added into all of our classes, I don't know if you've seen them before, but Moditech makes a magnet set of different magnetic hazards that you can put on the vehicle, like side curtain inflators and...
I think the batteries, and then they have something for the high-strength steels, and they've got a pretty good little kit, I think.
I mean, that's a simple tool that works pretty well, and yeah, it's all about, and it's still all about vehicle technology, but at least you can throw that into say your 1980s junker, and make people, well, look, that their battery is elsewhere. It's not here. Where might else it be?
Yeah. And there's another way I put together in a couple classes I did, and I kind of threw it out there. I apologize for the ModiTech guys, but you can go to Staples or OfficeMax, and you can actually buy an 8.5 by 11 magnetic printable, you know, sheet. You can throw it in your printer, print off whatever you want. Then the guy who's running the training can keep all that stuff kind of in his back pocket. And as that evolution starts playing out, he can slap those on. Now you're running into this. What are you going to do?
Yep. That's a better idea, because a lot of times and you have that flexibility, and with that, and I agree with you with the fact of, yeah, they have these basic formats and stuff like that, but we can make things that actually look more like what they really are and such like that, what an actual cylinder looks like. One of the things, one of my guys that teaches for me, basically from some of the props from Detroit, we basically made, we've taken the high pressure canisters for side curtains and put magnets on them and kind of stuff them behind. We'll pull a trim, put them in place, put the trim back as best as we can. So this way, at least, if it's something that then they pull the trim off, then they can see, hey, this is what it actually looks like, versus just having it sitting on the outside of the car where it's obvious.
Yeah, that's a great idea, and that brings into that realistic. You know, they should be peeling away the trim, looking for those canisters, and then it's that safety factor too that the canisters already been deployed.
Cool.
So you don't have to worry about that. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was just simply we had just enough canisters that we just had between everything, and Dennis was nice enough to let us, yeah, just take them. So we just did. So we had, we just took them, and then because they had already been expended, so you didn't have to worry about any kind of issues with them if somebody accidentally cut them or whatever, or even just the fact of just having live canisters rolling around in the truck. I don't think that would be a good thing to happen, come flying through one of the compartments accidentally or something like that. Yeah, all Alex did was put some he basically gorilla glued some magnets to it, and yeah, it seems to work pretty good. Sometimes they hold, sometimes they don't. But you know, hey, what the heck? You know?
No, that's a great idea.
So, along with this technology wise, and one of the things that I kind of also when I started out the premise of this of what. And I wanted to kind of see what your feelings are on this. One of the things that people get so twisted up about today, we talk and hype about alternative fueled vehicles and all these other kind of things. And finally, we've gotten around to getting people to listen. I've been saying about, well, what about all this high-strength materials stuff? I've been talking about it for a good decade almost. That this stuff is coming, this is going to be an issue, it's going to be more of a problem. And especially now with the newer round of side impact standards, you're going to see more and more vehicles go over to having laminated glass all the way around. That was one of the things that the chair from the SAE task force that I was on, he was talking about, that a lot of the GM products, you're going to start to see a lot of laminated glass all the way around. Where the center punch that we take for granted that's going to go up and just break the window, that's not going to work anymore. You got to cut. Maybe not. Maybe so. You've had the chance to use PackX Smash, so you know that that material makes that glass now as strong as you can actually cut that tempered window once you apply PackX Smash to it, and it would hold it together that strong. But what people really need to come back and realize is you really need to come back down to and look at stuff in a basic format. You really need to look at basic skills and a basic mindset to a lot of this stuff, that it really isn't all as bad as what it appears to be. And what we kind of really need to go about is having a more open-mindedness. That's not really a word, but I'll go with it. Open-mindedness with dealing with creating a patient pathway today.
Oh, I agree. And I tell you, one of the biggest things is the fact that, you know, a lot of people look at the high-strength steel and they get, oh, my cutters aren't going to cut through it. I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm not going to be able to do that. But if we go back and we think, just back to basic extrication, our cutters are strengths at the notch, and they're weakest when the blades are fully open.
Yep.
And how often do we open them all the way to get around a B-pillar when we really don't need to?
Mm-hmm.
It's just what people are accustomed to doing. They open it all the way up. They position the tool with really no regard to the strength of the cutters, and then they try to cut it. They optimize their cutter opening and optimize their position of that tool so they can minimize the amount that the blades are open. I think they can use a basic skill to get around a lot of trouble with high-strength steel.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I agree. I mean, one of the even simple things that has come back to me over and over again, it's also the way people, the angle of the way people cut things. It's if you cut it a right angle at 90 degrees, the better off you'll be. And sometimes one of the things, especially one of the things that I saw at when I was at Rescue Days a couple years back, if they went up or down a couple inches, depending on where it was, they would get through it. Versus where one of the things that I saw, it had stalled. The tool got stalled on a Volkswagen Passat A post. And basically what they did was they opened it back up and they went up probably about 2 inches, and then it cut. Then it went through. So here, it was a matter of where it was cut to. There, and it was, and you're right, it was not a lot of thought was given to, well, I'm just going to cut here. Not a lot of people need to think about where they place the tools, where they're going, and such like that.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, how many people, when you ask them about a spreader, they tell you, oh, they spread open. But do they spread open or do they open with an arc? And is knowing how the arc's going to, you know, manipulate the material, that's an important key that oftentimes can be success or failure.
Sure. Sure.
And like especially, you said, it's those basic skills and that basic mindset used in an advanced, you know, nature.
Yeah, because one of the things, for example, when we watch people do dash lifts, if they understand the principle behind, well, we want to try and make this as straight and vertical of a lift as possible, yet the tool you're going to use is, it's going to arc. It's not going to lift straight. It's not like you could get a little ram in there and go straight up. You have to kind of think about, okay, now where do I put these tips to optimize getting as straight as possible lift-wise?
Oh, I totally agree. That tool position and understanding how the tool works. I mean, like you said, the basic skills are a lot of times what people kind of forget about, I would say, is a way to say it, but a lot of times they forget about it because they've learned so many different ways, so many more advanced ways, maybe a different way, a better way, and that's what they've always been using. But when that one technique fails them, they don't want to look back on a more basic technique.
Mm-hmm. Or even tool choices. You know that a lot of people just associate hydraulic rams with doing one thing, doing a dash roll. Okay. but hydraulic rams can do so much more, especially when we've talked about, you know, cars being smaller and then getting smaller with losing space because of the vehicles crushed and absorbed energy and all that kind of stuff. Maybe we need to reproportion the inside to do just simple, some of the simple work that we need to do now, too.
Oh, I agree.
And one of the things that had really hit home, especially in the early 2000s when I did a lot of teaching over with ISET over in Holland, they regularly cross-rammed all the time because, well, I got to tell you, Smitty, a lot of the cars that they were using, some of the Citroens and some of the other little whatever car kind of cars they were, there wasn't much to them, and they would crush them, and they would. Now they use live patients in all their training, so it was a real person, and basically they would crush the car, and then the person would weasel themselves into whatever space that was there, and man, there was some wrecks that they simulated that there was no other way other than to basically reproportion the car inside just to work, just to get an EMS person inside to work on them, you know, just patient care wise.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and I had brought that back here and people were like, you had to do what with what? Why would you need to do that? And it was like, this was like, I don't know, I want to say 2002. Ish, and I brought this back to my fellow coworkers and instructors and things like that, and I'm like, hey, look at this stuff. I'm like, did you ever think about this stuff? And I got into one of my guys. He's like he is truly like the Zen. Oh, you remember Tony from the DVD series? Short little guy, glasses, mm-hmm. Reddish hair. He is the Zen guy of lifting bags. I've never seen anybody. If it's like whenever we teach an operations class and we talk about lifting bags, he gets everybody like to kind of sit around and he talks about basic cribbing, basic cribbing principles, and then basic lifting bag techniques, and all goes through. He goes through all the equipment and stuff like that. And it's like sitting around a campfire being like kumbaya. I've never seen somebody that can turn a simple task like that into something actually really, really actually interesting. So,
yeah.
But he's a good one with – we were doing B-post tears out at – when we were doing the Ford, when we were doing our hot workshop at FDIC for a couple of years, when we were using new cars, we were doing side removals with rams and things like that, because it actually worked out, especially with the rams that were telescoping, where you could get the ram seated against the transmission tunnel and... Because it being a telescoping ram where it would extend farther out, you get it into the notch of where the relief cut was for the B-post. and it actually worked better than a spreader, depending on what vehicle it was. And we were talking about we had these Ford 500s. I don't think they were around too long, but it was one of their German-engineered cars that they had, and it was like it was a bear material-wise to manage. And a Ram did a better job than the spreaders did to do a side removal. You know, the push part of pushing the B post away from the vehicle itself.
Yeah, I think that the Ram is a good tool, and it has more uses than people ever give it the credit for.
Yep. Yeah. So, what about one of the things? And you and I both put up different things, and we share things on our between our Facebook pages. And by the way, to plug Smitty's website, it's where you want to go out to, boronextrication, all one word, .com. And Smitty's Facebook page is Boron Extrication. And we share a lot of different things between ourselves and Modi Tech and some of the other different extrication sites out there. But even safety system-wise, and kind of let's talk about safety systems a little bit, Smitty. One of the things that I had to laugh, we actually had earlier this year, we had a Scion IQ in our class. One of the guys is a service manager for a local Toyota dealer, Toyota Scion dealer, and he brought one of the, he says, I got this new little car you might be interested in. It's called an IQ. I go, a Scion IQ? He says, yeah. And I said, yeah, bring that to class. I said, that'd be a great car to do a show and tell thing was. And I had to laugh because you know what kind of car, you know what car that is.
And oh, yeah.
It was interesting to show everybody between, one, the fact that, quote-unquote, you can fit four people in, which, yeah, not exactly. It's one of those stuff as many people into a phone booth as you can if you need to put four adults in it, that's for sure. But where all the different 11 airbags in the car were.
Oh, yeah. And that vehicle, if I'm not mistaken, even has a anti-submarine airbag in the driver's seat cushion.
Yep. Yep. That was one of the things. And it's actually in both of them, if I remember correctly, Smitty, besides having knee bags in both sides. They also have the driver's side has the same bag that Lexus has in their high-end vehicle, in their LS600, whether it's a hybrid or a conventional drivetrain. Basically, it's a bag that was introduced by Renault back in the middle of 2000 in their, I think it was, I'll bastardize this name, I know. McGain, I think it was if I'm pronouncing it correct, vehicle-wise. Basically, was an anti-submarining bag. It was a bag that lifted basically underneath your thighs. It was an aluminum. The bag was inside the seat itself. It was basically an aluminized bag versus the conventional bags that we're used to seeing, with it being a cloth, Tyvek kind of material. But it actually lifted, like you said, it was anti-submarining. It would lift the forward part of the seat up so your butt really couldn't slide forward. And I don't...
And they tried to... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, go ahead, Smitty.
Oh, I was going to say the... Well, they do with a lot of the seats is in the actual seat structure, the cushion pan, the metal part. They try to put in an anti-submarine ramp that kind of does the same as an airbag. But oftentimes, you know, I think with airbags being so commonplace, you know, they're finding a better, you know, safety benefit with those.
Oh, really?
So that's why I think we're going to start seeing we may not see the onslaught of them, but, you know, it's something we're going to have to keep an eye out. But, hey, Dave, I hate to run on you, but I'll get in trouble with my guys from my department because we've got Tuesday nights or our CrossFit or TaxFit night.
Oh, gotcha, brother. No problem. Hey,
so I appreciate you letting me have on.
I'm glad that you came on and came on and talked for a while. I greatly appreciate it.
All righty. Well, you stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Smitty, you be safe, too. I'll talk to you real soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Okay. Well, that was Mike Smith. Smitty, once again, from BoronExtrication.com. Smitty's website and his Facebook page are a fantastic resource for you out there. Whether it's safety systems or Smitty's specialty, he was being kind, talking about himself. He's a fantastic knowledge base, and he would do anything for you. Really great guy. But his technology, he does engineering for seats and things like that for a variety of different manufacturers, and he knows quite a bit about different high-strength, ultra-high-strength materials. So he knows about those kind of materials and what's coming down the pike. And if he's telling you there's some sort of uber-strength alloy that's out there, you can bet it's coming. One of the things, and along with that, material-wise, one of the things that we didn't really get to because time-wise, it doesn't give us a whole lot of time to talk about all this different stuff. But one of the things also to remember that you got to worry about today, besides alloys, whether they're steels of some kind or composites of different alloys put together, but you have composite materials such as carbon fiber and that stuff too, where you have moldable and now injection molded type of composites that are stronger than steel, but yet act completely different than any kind of alloy, steel, aluminum, whatever, are very fibrous, act more like wood or fiberglass than anything else. So even there, we run into it with our tools, and our tools don't quite like it either, because depending on your tool choice, your hydraulic cutters are made to cut alloy material. They don't cut well on fibrous material. It has a tendency to kind of smoosh the material together unless you're working with almost a straight blade cutter or a combi tool type of tool. So that's one of the things to keep in the back of your head with that. In fact, one of the things that you can look at from the motorsports end of things, look what kind of tools the different safety teams, like for example, the Homatro IRL people use. They use, besides a new car technology cutter, they also use a combi tool because they don't have to spread things very much, but they also need the serrated edge blade type of material to cut things with. So that's something else to keep in mind down the road. So to come back to airbags, and especially we talked about that Scion IQ vehicle. That's a vehicle that has 11 airbags. And it's one of the things that out of those 11 airbags, three of those are curtains. Curtain airbags, one on each side. And then actually a rear curtain across the back window, because the back window from the headrest to the back window are only about 3 to 4 inches of space between the rear seat back headrest and the rear window. So that's why there's an airbag there. There's side impact bags in both driver and passenger front seats. And there are knee bags, as well as frontal airbags that we've become used to, and an anti-submarine bag on the driver's side that actually lifts the front of the seat up, like Smitty and I were talking about, and also knee bags to prevent your knees from going forward, too. So it's kind of like a whole different direction. One of the things you need to think about with safety systems today, besides side curtains on each side that we've started to become used to, because they've been around for a good 12, 13 years now, that you actually have side curtains in the middle of the vehicle, depending on GM SUVs have the driver's side curtain in the middle between the driver and front seat passenger today. Toyota products have a rear seat side curtain between the occupants in the back overseas. Not here in North America yet, but overseas. So that's something that we will definitely eventually see. And then also, one of the things to remember, Ford has, well, not only Ford, Ford and other companies now have seatbelt airbags where the actual shoulder belt has an airbag, a passive airbag that comes out and reacts slowly and comes out from the shoulder belt. So that's one of the things that you need to keep in mind. Also, anti-whiplash head restraints, where it's not necessarily an airbag. And one of the things to remember, a lot of times when we think of safety systems, we're talking about airbags. A lot of the safety systems, to be honest with you, are not airbags. For example, a good example of this is the anti-whiplash head restraints in a lot of vehicles, where it actually moves forward to capture the occupant's head in a crash. But also pop-up rollover protection in vehicles today, in a lot of the, especially the hard top retractable roof convertibles. One of the things that I have seen on the street and in testing, one of the things that was interesting that I have seen of anything that has accidentally deployed that you wouldn't expect to deploy have been pop-up rollover bars, where either the power surge or some sort of electrical short has actually activated these devices, and here the vehicle hasn't rolled over, or the top isn't even down, it's up. I can remember helping out at rescue days over in Germany a couple of years back, and one of the vehicles that they had was a Volkswagen EOS convertible that had been crash tested, yet it was on its wheels, and the pop-up rollover system had deployed and was actually putting a tremendous amount of tension against glass. And when the glass actually was broken, the glass exploded everywhere, because the force of the rollover system pushing against the glass was tremendous. So it had a tremendous amount of loaded energy stored into the glass itself. So that's one of the things that you need to be aware of, too, is all these different safety systems that we're going to run into. One of the things that we regularly teach our students, anytime that you cut into the vehicle structure, for example, a relief cut into the B post, a relief cut into the A post, it's a good practice, or a roof post, especially roof post and roof edges today. You want to pull the trim away so you can see what you're cutting through behind where your tool is going. You want to make sure, for one, there's not some sort of safety system device, whether it's the actuating cylinder or the airbag system itself sitting there. Or one of the things that you might be able to see as well is some of the high-strength reinforcements, where you can see some of the material, where you can see some of the different layers of material and get an eyeball of where it's weakest to try and cut through. So that's one of the other things that we have to do that will help with trim pulling today. That'll give you another advantage with this. So that's something to keep in mind with just simple trim pool. And I know that Smitty and I talked about that tonight real briefly as well. So let's kind of recap what we've talked about so far. We talked about in the beginning, we talked about kind of coming back to basics. Everybody wants to do the advanced stuff. Everybody wants to do the once-in-a-lifetime job type of scenario and such like that. That's great. That's great. And I don't have any kind of problems with that. But one of the things, and even as Smitty said, one of the things that we fail to come back to time and time again is basics, basic principles, basics, how the tools work. Like Smitty said, do you realize that your spreader, when it spreads and it, when it actually opens up into an arc, doesn't open up into a straight line type of lift or move, so to speak. And cutting, instead of cutting at an angle, we should always cut at 90 degrees, basically at a right angle to what we're cutting at. And when we're cutting, if the material where we're cutting at defeats the tool, which it very well might, maybe either moving it up or down, or also coming at it from a slightly different angle, maybe from the opposite end. So that's something that we have to keep in mind as we work today. And again, that comes back to simple basic skill principles. Learning how, knowing what the tools can do, what they can't do, what they should be able to do today. Because one of the things we also talked about, we talked about using hydraulic rams. You can use hydraulic rams for much more than just dash rolls. Reproportioning the inside of the vehicle, okay? Basically cross ramming, using the ram as basically a longer version of a spreader, or actually a straighter version of a spreader, too. So that's something to think about as we work. How this basically, these material, these tools, and again coming back to a basic, capture those basic principles. That includes even your stabilization equipment and such, like I kind of hinted at in the beginning too. So then we talked a little bit about materials. We talked about a lot of the different high-strength materials, the different issues that we're going to run into, and then Smitty hinted on same things that I've read through SAE journals and magazine of some of the newer materials that are coming down the pipeline. We think we've seen really high-strength and ultra-high-strength and ultra-ultra-high-strength. Well, guess what, people? There's even higher strength materials that are coming down the pipe, because what vehicles manufacturers want, what they want to do, and I'll reiterate it, Smitty hit it exactly. They want to do two things. They want to make vehicles safe insurance-wise. They want to do well with all the insurance testing and such like that, and they want to make the car lightweight for gas mileage purposes. So they need to make a super strong, super light car as much as possible. That's great for the manufacturers and that's great for the consumers, but for our end of things, that makes it a whole heck of a lot harder for us to manipulate patients and get them out and such like that. So then we hit upon it. The next thing we hit upon was different safety systems. Now, safety systems, as you know, we've had frontal airbags since 1989. That was widespread use. Started out first on the driver's side, driver's front airbag, then to the passenger front airbag, then on to side impact bags, side curtains, then knee bags, and then bags all sorts of different places, in all different places in the vehicle. And as they've said, as all the different people have said that, whether it's me, whether it's other people from different trade publications that have hinted at, talked about straight out that, there's a lot of different systems that are coming down the pike that we need to be aware of and be conscious of, where some of these are one-off. A lot of these things really aren't so much one-off. If one vehicle has it, then other ones kind of capture it and utilize it as well. So that's something to think about as we kind of march down the pike. And also, when I had said about coming back to our basics about our tools, about our different hydraulic tools, about our cutters and spreaders, are they up to the task today? That's one of the things that we've talked about over and over again with how old are your tools? Are your tools able to manage and deal with vehicles today? And one of the things with that comes back to this, and I said this in the very beginning, still comes back to vehicle rescue is a patient care-driven skill. We still need to create the proper pathway to disentangle the patient, get them out. What if our tools can't break, cut, spread, crush, whatever, the materials that we're working on? Then we have to go back to and utilize existing spaces that are there. And we can do that a whole different ways with a whole series of different tools. One of the things that I had mentioned with Smitty was one of the things that I came away from teaching quite a bit over in Holland and different places over in Europe and overseas has been the fact of how they utilize, because they necessarily don't have the newest types of equipment out there and such like that, that they utilize existing spaces with the tools that they have, and that those tools make the job work. They make it work, make it happen. So it's all about the proper mindset and getting to know your equipment well and what it can and cannot do. So creating that existing space, say it's a window, say it's a rear window and we need to take a patient out. Well, we still can take the patient in line, if you think about it, out the back of the vehicle by enlarging the rear window, laying the seat back, putting a longboard down, and sliding the patient straight up out. Yes, is it difficult to do? Sure. Do you have a lot of space to work with? No. Is it possible to utilize that? Absolutely. Seen it done. Might take a little bit more time, but if it's a time-critical patient, that's the type of skills that we need to have available to us and available for us to use and utilize. So that's something to keep in mind as we march along this road on vehicle rescue. Is that? So, with that, I'm going to kind of wrap up early today because I'm actually have to be on shift. One of the things to kind of want to plug real quick, a bunch of different things if I could. Fireengineering.com that sponsors the Blog Talk Radio series with all my fellow co-authors and such like that for the various different topics that they discuss and talk about. My own company, Roadway Rescue. You can find us at roadwayrescue.com or on Facebook at Roadway Rescue. Also, our DVD series that I authored and was produced by Fire Engineering Books, that is actually up on Facebook at Fire Extrication DVD Series, or you can see it at fireextricationbooks.com. Shout out to my friends at Turk US and Turk Canada, and my friends, both my fellow instructors at Roadway and my friends around the world that just amaze me that they pick up and download this and listen to me talk for an hour and a half, just talk about car stuff once a month. in some way, different forms and such. Think about a friend of mine who's a competitor, a co-competitor of mine from Hagerman Fire Department. Ralph has contracted flesh-eating disease on the job, so keep him in your thoughts and prayers. And if you go out to Hagerman Fire Department, they're a department out on Long Island, go out to their website, find out different ways that you can and his family and such. Shout out to my fellow co-workers in the Med Central hub tonight, Jester, Buckbuck, and the Patch, and Odin, because I'll be joining them soon. And as always, as I've always said, be safe out there. And if you have any questions, please feel free to look us up online, send us an email, give us a call. We'll be able to help you out. If we can't answer your question, we can direct you the right way to go look for the proper answer out there. Because that's one of the problems of today. There's a lot of mis and disinformation that's out there. So with that, I'm going to wrap up for tonight. Be safe out there, everyone.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.